Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
Yeah, that was not a typo. Those ticket prices are real.
Wow.
Wow, indeed.
Mm-hmm.
The most expensive non-Super Bowl in NFL history. Thank you, Dustin. Appreciate that little fact there. We're actually going to talk ticket prices a little bit later, so we will bring that back up.
It's a great note.
Most expensive non-Super Bowl in NFL history.
And keep in mind, this is only the divisional round.
Okay, we'll go back to old bits, but we knew if the Lions could ever get good that this is the risk. We didn't know what the numbers would be. We didn't know exactly what it would look like. We're defining all of those things now, but we knew that Detroit would lose its mind. And it certainly is. And rightfully so.
Yeah, safe to say that's what's happening. Later in the hour, we are going to get to it. What that means for you with these ticket prices.
Yeah. And again, go to Twitch. You get a chance to see Greg Hargrave, our producer. He just waved to everybody as he was walking by us. Thank you, Greg.
There you go. we also have to talk about the wings from last night.
Yeah. Loss. All right. Your overreact, Jims, was
wrong.
Was wrong.
They did lose another hockey game.
We all knew that was going to happen at some point. Didn't really know or believe that it would happen last night or in that shape or form. San Jose Sharks, not a good hockey team. And they spanked the Wings last night.
They did. And it may have needed to happen.
Don't go down this is a good loss.
No. I'm not saying losing is ever good. I'm saying they got a 4-game trip on the road coming up. And they had started to play some lazy hockey. They were up big against Seattle. Their third period, even McClellan said, wasn't good. And after the game yesterday, he didn't mince words. Like this, we should play some audio for people because I think McClellan is the opposite of Derek Lalonde. I thought he was brutally honest. But even in temperament, and especially in temperament, he is brutally honest. He's not afraid to mince words. There's no elephant in the room. He's just going to say it. And he talked about, Greg, the fact that they were entitled to win last night. They didn't play well enough.
Yeah. Human nature. All right. You're up big and your third period's not going to be like the first or second. It is human nature and you have to fight that.
Right. So you poor finish against Seattle carries over to a rough start against San Jose, a team that they played down to their level. They gave up a shorthanded goal. I mean, what's going on? Some of the sloppy defensive breakdowns, like this is not effing hockey. And to the point where he's going to have to call some people out, and he did. So afterwards, he was asked about Hull, who had a terrible turnover in front of his own net for the fifth goal that was kind of a back-breaking goal. And Lalonde would never do this. McClellan didn't mince words.
Love it. Sometimes you just got to. I want to draw a comparison here to what we saw at the beginning of the Dan Campbell era. When you have a player that you know, everybody in the world knows that you could play better. There was a time in year one where he publicly called out Jared Goff. And I don't remember exactly what the words were, Bart, but we asked him about some interceptions or about the play of Jared Goff. And he said, yeah, we expect him to play better. He knows he can play better. There's accountability in that. And when you have a coach that's not going to mince words, And he didn't throw him under the bus.
No.
Everyone saw, everyone with a brain knows that you can't do what he did in front of the net. And it's, you're not expected to be perfect. No one's going to be perfect. You're going to make some boneheaded moves. You're going to make, and I guarantee you right after that play, he was like, that might be one of the dumbest things I've done in years. And but there's no sense in trying to give an answer when you are asked, why didn't he play in the last 5 minutes? Or were you trying to send a message? And his answer is, I don't really need to send a message. Whether he played or not wasn't going to make a difference. But he knows it was a bad move. He knows he can play better.
He sent himself a message. Just how bluntly he put that. I don't need to send a message. He played terribly. He's not a terrible player, but right. That's a terrible play. You can't take the puck in front of your own net. That's like basic stuff. He also got lost in the corner on the first goal, gave up the puck on the first goal. Like, he was sloppy. He wasn't good. And the coach doesn't have to mince words and protect people's feelings because these are professionals. These are grown men. This isn't, you know, six-year-old hockey, eight-year-old hockey. This is grown men. You know you screwed up. You're going to fix it, and you're going to be better next time. There's nothing wrong with calling out poor play. And I felt like Lalonde never wanted to step on any toes, walking on eggshells.
He didn't want to hurt feelings.
These guys want to be challenged.
Yeah.
They want to be challenged. They want to raise the standard on this team. And when you lose, that's why I say it may be something they can bark about now and go, hey, guys, we're about to hit the road. If you're going to play this kind of hockey, we're going to go right back to where we were. It becomes one of those pivot points, fork in the road moments. Hey, we're going on the road. You know what it's going to take, and it's not going to be what we did last time out.
And a lot of it has to come down to tone as well. What's the tone that Tom McClellan is saying those things with? It's not an angry tone. No. It's not blaming him individually for the loss. There's a lot of other reasons why they lost that game. That's the most obvious. And he was asked a direct question about it. So it comes down to accountability. And he is going to hold Justin Hall accountable, just like he will everyone else. Now, the question I do have, as I compare him to Dan Campbell, because I think we both like straight shooters.
Yeah.
And Dan has proven to be a straight shooter. And it looks like Todd McClellan is going to be a straight shooter, is when there is a moment, and it's probably not as obvious because there's not as many eyeballs on Todd McClellan and the Wings as there is on Dan Campbell and football in general. When something happens where he makes a mistake and costs them a point or a game, is he willing to say, this one's on me? Because if you're going to say this one is not, he didn't say it was on Justin Hall, but he called out a player.
If you're going to dish it, you got to take it.
Yeah. Is he willing to say at some point, this game is on me?
Well, we've seen Campbell do that. I mean,
yeah,
the first loss of the season, he came out. I don't even think it was all on him, but when they lost to Tampa and they screwed up before the half, he came out and said, the coach did this. This is me. I screwed up.
He said it at halftime. I expect the guys to cover me in the second half, and that didn't happen. And at the end of the game, he said, this one's on me.
Yeah.
So is Todd McClellan at some point willing to say, this one's on me?
Yeah, like last night wasn't, so it didn't need to be said. But at some point from now until mid-April, they're probably going to lose a game that he goes,
I made a mistake.
Did I need to challenge that one?
Yeah.
Or did I tinker too much with some chemistry? Did I go with the wrong goalie? Like, did I make a bet? It's a little easier in football, right? I mean, you have a fourth down decision. There are these critical, you know, we stop, pause, and analyze. In hockey, it's a little more free-flowing. But yeah, I don't know. He strikes me as a guy who will step out and say, that's not on the guys tonight. I put us in a bad spot.
And so that's going to be, I mean, not that everybody's going to be sitting there going, oh, well, you know, we're waiting for him to make a mistake. Well, are we going to keep score? Yeah, no, that's not it. Because again, there's more games. There's more going on in hockey. And you mentioned it's more free flowing. So it might not be as obvious until he draws attention to it. And some of those are, like you said, I don't think that Tampa game is all on him. Like, they got inside the red zone 5 times and didn't score.
Correct.
That's the reason they lost that game. So is that on Ben Johnson? Is it on Jared Goff? Is it on the offense? Is it the offensive line? Is it on Dan Campbell because of what happened at the beginning of the at the end of the first half? Like, sometimes a coach will take a bullet for the team because it's the right thing to do at the time.
Yeah.
And is he going to be willing to do that?
you said tone earlier. I think that's the key with McClellan. The tone has been everything they've needed since the moment he took over. He took over and he said, we're going to change things up and we're going to play a little looser and we're going to play better hockey and do all the little things that we weren't doing before. And I think his tone was right last night. Like, I wonder how that lands to you guys. They lost badly to a bad team with a bad effort and a bad performance. Sloppy, entitled hockey is what Todd McClellan called it. That's brutal honesty from a head coach.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't feel like we see that much in sports where a coach comes out and said, we were entitled. And then specifically says to a player, oh, he sent himself a message. He played terribly. We very rarely see that, but I'm curious, how did that land with you? Like, I love it. John, you love it. I mean, that's what this team needs is some tough love. 248-539-9797. We'll get some ticket texts on that. We'll get to Heather's news. A dilemma for the Lions this week. And yeah, the tickets, we're going to talk about them. It's 97.1.
Hey, America's favorite place to watch football, or really any sport, is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino. Catch all the biggest games. And we've got some great ones coming up in pro football, even in college football on Monday night. The biggest games at a viewing experience absolutely built for us, the sports fan. Chill in one of the six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of the massive 40-foot-tall high-definition screen located at Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas, and it's on Fremont Street. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
And they're going to go on the road. That's Todd McClellan, Red Wing head coach. Four road games coming up. They finally lost, and it's going to be about how they handle losing. And I love the tone he set, calling out the team for being entitled, at least for one night.
Yeah, you win seven in a row, and especially the last one against Seattle, you know.
Got to let off the gas.
You're in command the entire time, and human nature is that you're going to let up a little bit. You got to fight that. And then you got to fight it even more that it doesn't carry over into the next game, and it clearly did against San Jose.
Yeah, it was bad. They lost 6-3.
Never in it.
Hull had one terrible play in the corner and then an even worse play on the fifth goal, just skating the puck out in front of his own net. I mean, it's basic stuff. Yeah. And he didn't mince words with Hull. Said he played terribly. Said he sent his own message. I don't need to send a message. But I think reinforced it with he is better than that, and we will get more out of him, and he will play better than that. He's got their backs while also being brutally honest.
Yeah.
And sometimes you need that tough love. This team desperately needed that tough love when they hired him back, a couple days after Christmas.
Yeah.
So that was a 101 mistake last night. You don't do that as a defenseman with a puck. He was asking for it.
Yeah.
And the frustrating thing was it came right off the goal to make it a one-goal game where they had played horrible, but you thought they could salvage something. And it was a brilliant goal by Raymond and Larkin off the faceoff.
Yeah.
And Celebrini had a very good game, but Larkin completely owned him on the faceoff. And so you do that, and then it just, you knew that was the dam broke. You knew they weren't coming back after they gave up that goal.
No, because they were down 2-0, made it 2-1, you make it 4-3. Like, you're not in it, to John's point, but you're a play away from being in it, and when you make the mistake that Hull did,
You get it to OT, and you get the point
ship.
At least.
Well, and the other, the backdrop of this, too, is San Jose last year when they came to Detroit was one of those games that got away, and you would have thought, hey, not this time.
Yeah,
not this time, but it was this time again.
That's the most I've seen Celebrini play hockey, by the way.
He's going
to be a stud. They showed some stat about him. He's already up there in terms of something with faceoffs or whatever, with the best in the game. He's 18.
I know, he's a teenager playing college hockey a year ago. Let's get to Adam in Gibraltar. Adam, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. Yeah, I mean, what McClellan said last night, I mean, honestly, holding his players accountable, I love it. Mentality-wise, I mean, that's the difference between a winning coach and a losing coach. Lam would have never done that. And that's honestly the kind of coach I wanted. I mean, with such a young core, I always wanted a veteran head coach that knew how to win. And McClellan was a winner wherever he went, especially San Jose back in the day. And an assistant under Babcock, that's the kind of coach I've always wanted Steve Yzerman to hire. But yeah, that's the mentality of a winning coach. And Lalonde had a mentality of a losing coach. So yeah, I love what he said.
And it's a guy who's coached 1,100 hockey games.
Like, right.
I mean, he's got a little bit of authority in that way.
Well, and he's got enough experience. I compared him to Dan Campbell. How about AJ Hinch? Where it's the psychology of it. And, you know, sometimes you got to be therapist, and sometimes you got to rule with a heavy hand. Other times, you know, there's a light tap. it you just got to know what touch to use. And they're not always going to be perfect as coaches, but you've got to know what touch to use at the right moments. And it feels like, you know, he comes in and how do you win seven games in a row? You lose your first, but then you rip off seven games. There's a lot of trying to get this, the mentality of these guys back to a winning mentality, back to, I've got to play better as an individual. Our units, our lines, everything's got to be better. And you've got to be able to flip that mentality from where it was. We've seen it with the Pistons.
Yeah.
We talk about the coaches.
Bickerstaff, yeah.
It is such an important role on a team. And each sport is going to be a little bit different. But when you only win 14 games, you've got to find a way to get in the heads of your athletes to flip a switch that says, you know, okay, winning is possible. And here's the steps that we got to do to trust what we've been doing in practice, trust what we've seen early in the season to now winning basketball. Same thing with hockey. And when you come in the middle of the season, it's even harder because they've been beaten down.
Yeah, and he had talked about that when he was introduced. He's like, anytime this is happening, you're not in a good place.
Right.
He knew what he was walking into. And John, I think you said trust. You got to get buy-in immediately, and he did. Those players have to buy what you're selling immediately.
It's got to be genuine and it can't be fake because players are going to see right through it.
And I was just going to bring that up to you. You know, I mean, having been in these locker rooms, you got a coach going wah, 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 in the Charlie Brown voice.
Yeah.
He has to strike a balance because if you're going to come in and be a hard ass, if you're going to push these guys, they can't tune you out. They have to believe in what you're doing. And I think his track record had spoke for itself. I think they were hungry for a change, wanted someone to push them, wanted a little tough love. They don't want to be babied. Like, that's the other thing. I think you got to know your team. He knows these guys don't want to be babied. They want to win. And if that means you're going to get called out for playing poorly, even publicly in this case, the solution is to play better.
Yeah.
And they know he's got their back, which I think is also big at the end of the day.
Yeah, because we've heard praise for, what, six of the games, you know, and didn't hear it after the last win. But you hear praise. Now, all of a sudden, along with that comes loftier expectations. And when you don't fulfill those expectations, because once you show it, then coach knows you can do it. And when you don't, okay, we got to get back to those expectations because you've already met them. And that's where we expect everybody to play every single night.
One last Red Wing note that we haven't addressed. It's come up a few times on the ticket text. Can we quickly talk about how bad Huso is and the need to stop putting him in net? Brutal, Kirk and Milford. Another one says, I'd rather see Cookies in goal than Ville Husso. He's the worst in the NHL on the ticket text.
Oh, are you the ultra reserved goalie?
The E-Bug, the emergency backup goalie? No.
I want to see Cookies.
Gosh, can you imagine?
All the big pads. I think your head would look really small. All these big pads, and there's Cookies.
Guys, and Heather, I love this kind of coach. No BS, but the team needs more than tough love. They need D-men. They need a goalie. They need a whole fourth line. Players make coaches in the end. Yzerman still has to do more. Mark and Fowlerville.
Yeah.
The Husso thing, I'm not going to defend him. He didn't play well. My point is, if you go back and watch those goals, how many of them were defensive breakdowns? How many of them were shots right point blank in front of the net? I mean, they did not put Husso in a good position regardless. All right. We have Heather with the news. Let's get to it.
So the Farmington Hills City Council voted down a proposed Sheetz gas station for the intersection of 12 Mile and Middle Belt Roads, and it was all over concerns about its closeness to residential neighborhoods and the number of gas stations that already exist at that same intersection. So the vote was unanimous. Council members said that the project was too intense and not compatible, obviously, with the surrounding neighborhoods, kind of what I just said. Sheetz is obviously very disappointed, and they say they are still committed to expanding into the greater Detroit area. So,
yeah.
You know, I guess, sorry, to Sheetz, you know. Yeah. It sounds like people didn't want it there anyway, so it is what it is. A 19-year-old Detroit man has been charged with assault after he allegedly stabbed three family members at a local hotel. On Sunday morning, police found the victims. This was the suspect's mom, 51 years old, his dad, 52 years old. Actually, I got those ages mixed up, but it doesn't matter. And his 11-year-old sister. They were all stabbed multiple times in the hotel lobby. Thankfully, all non-life-threatening injuries. They were all transported to a local hospital for treatment. The suspect was arraigned Monday, was given a $300,000 bond. The Detroit Auto Show is hosting a special event to celebrate the Lions ahead of their playoff game. And Mike Posner and several Lions alumni will be in attendance. So it's called the All Roads Lead to Detroit Celebration of the Detroit Lions at the Detroit Auto Show. It's this rally that will be held on Friday, obviously the day before the big game. Mike Posner will be performing. And then there's going to be appearances by Herman Moore, Eddie Murray, TJ Lang, and others as well. Tickets are $10. The event goes from 6:30 to 8 p.m.
Cool.
Yeah, very cool.
Be fun.
Everyone's getting in the spirit, celebrating the Lions. Listen to this. A 12-year-old boy was stopped by police on Sunday after taking his dad's SUV for a 90-mile joyride.
Well, it wasn't just to get some milk, right?
It wasn't. No, this 12-year-old boy was found actually... It started in, I guess, the Traverse City area because his dad called police around 2:35 a.m. on Sunday. Said, hey, my son took my car. I don't know where he is. I don't know where he's going. So they kind of put patrols out. Eventually, the guy was caught. Clare County police found him, pulled him over. And deputies also found a shotgun in the back seat and a small amount of marijuana as well.
12 years old?
12 years old. So he was held at the sheriff's office until his parents could pick him up. And police are seeking charges for using a motor vehicle without authority, operating a vehicle without a license, carrying a concealed weapon, and being a minor in possession of marijuana.
Wow.
Exactly. That's my thought when I saw the headline. I was like, whoa, 12? What was I doing?
Not that.
No, my gosh.
90 miles.
Yikes. Governor Whitmer is holding an art contest for Lions fans. So ahead of Saturday's showdown with the Commanders, the governor has invited residents to submit their best artistic interpretations of the Lions logo. And the contest isn't going to win you tickets to the game like some of these other contests have. It's just for fun. Your art will be showcased on her social media page. And you can go and submit your drawings at michigan.gov/onepride.
Nice opportunity for some young artists.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, this would be fun for any age, of course. But I was like, oh, if my kids were little older, that it'd be fun for them to something for them to do as well. But very cool. Okay, I don't know how many times I have to say it, but if you think you're having an online love affair with a mega celebrity, you're not. Don't most likely.
Really?
You're probably not. Oh. Yeah, sorry. There's a 53-year-old woman who was scammed out of $850,000 by a fake Brad Pitt. So the scammer actually first pretended to be Brad Pitt's mom and was like, oh my gosh, you would be perfect for my son. And then the woman started getting messages and AI photos from Brad, right? They started talking. She was getting messages for a year and a half.
What kind of photos?
And then I don't know. I'm guessing just basic pictures,
yes,
right?
Yes, because,
you know, there's no hands photo. AI really messes up people's fingers.
Yeah.
Like, so no hands. And I have no idea. I haven't seen the pictures. But anyway, eventually he said that I need money because I'm hospitalized. I have kidney cancer. I need money.
And somehow this wasn't in the news anywhere.
No. So she sent him money to a Turkish account. Almost $1 million. And then she finally saw a real photo of him with his girlfriend and thought,
you cheater. How dare you?
Yes.
Yeah, not that she had been lied to, but that he's cheating on her.
Right,
the level of delusion.
I think the real Brad Pitt should step in and help her out.
Oh yeah, God. Exactly.
It's Heather with the news. Jeff Daniels was on The Tonight Show yesterday. And last night, he was singing about breaking the curse of Bobby Lane. We're going to play some of that audio coming up next. We'll get to Lions tickets, the hottest ticket in a long time. Not since the Super Bowl have we seen prices like this. It's 97.1. We're going to get to a Lions dilemma for this weekend's game. But first, breaking out into song. No, not us. Jeff Daniels, he was on The Tonight Show last night. He was on with Jimmy Fallon, and he talked about and sang about breaking curses and Bobby Lane. Remember him and Peyton Manning did the whole the curse-breaking attempt earlier, and it seems to have
exercised
worked out
the demons.
You know, pretty well. Let's play it for people. Get your reaction. I've not heard this either.
Goodbye, all that sorrow. Come on, Costa. Goodbye, all that pain. Say goodbye to the same old Lions and the curse of Bobby Lane.
It's good. It's good.
You know when he says everybody, that includes you guys.
You guys just not. I don't know the words.
Well, now you do. He had just sung them.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
and he
I
said,
know,
now everybody.
Yeah, no.
We'll play it again later in the show, and we expect participation.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, Heather doesn't like this one. She's going to like the song we play way later in the show.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
No. Yeah. Say no now. Say no.
Have you heard the thing we're
I
playing
have
later?
I not, okay. But I can only imagine.
Say no. Yeah. Well, I mean, like that one, though.
Yeah, this was good. If we did jam it or slam it here, I think we're all jamming it.
Yeah. He's a much better singer than I anticipated. I don't know if
I've heard him sing before.
Yeah, have you? Yeah. I've not.
I like the beginning was a little the end was very good.
Oh, yeah.
I'm surprised how much I liked it.
Yeah. And hell of a nice guitar picker.
I'm a little bit tired of the story.
Of him and Peyton Manning?
Yeah, I mean, been there, done that. The whole curse and I don't know. I've moved
on.
Come
on, he's one of us.
I know he is. No, I'm not mad at Daniel. I'm just tired of the Bobby Lane stuff.
Oh, well, I mean, when
Stafford won the Super Bowl, it was over.
I don't think that's quite how that works.
No.
Same school?
Different
played
team.
Played here? Left the team?
Yeah. No, the curse is about us. Yes. Not winning anything here.
Yeah.
And I don't believe in curses, but I think it's all fun, right? It's the idea that we're overcoming our history, that this team is finally breaking through. And I love that.
Okay.
I love that
we
bring
might
it
be
up.
Falling into something here, and I hate that. I feel like people who still talk about the curse, or it's, I've moved on. Our team's good. Yeah. I feel like it's SOL-ish a little bit.
No, you said specifically there is no more SOL. Yeah. Did you listen?
Yeah, say goodbye to the same old Lions.
I know. It's still bringing it up, though. It's still bringing up something. It's the foundation of the curse.
Yeah, but he's
SOL.
Singing about how it's gone. He's
I know.
Singing about all of those things that used to be topics of conversation, that used to create agony for all Lions fans. And yes, we are now a competent franchise. We have a great GM, a great head coach. Sheila has proven to be a great owner. Now it all comes down to winning the Super Bowl.
And Tom, I do think, like we're talking about a historic run, you have to understand the history of it all, right? I know you do, but it's worth the
perspective. Nobody does more than me.
But it's worth the perspective.
Maybe equal.
Like it's, but Tom, that's part of what makes this so great. If we didn't have 60-plus years of agony, it wouldn't feel as good as it does right now. So to tell the story of this Lions team, you have to understand, acknowledge the anguish. So I have no issue with people, quote, bringing up
I know. They did, they did the whole thing a couple years ago, him and Manning.
Yeah.
And then this brings it to life on, you know, a late-night show here, telling the rest of the world what the curse is. I understand it to a degree. I just think, I don't know. We have the phrase now in politics or the world the last 10 to 15 years called truthers. Mm. I think there's cursers, too. The people just...
Who still think they're cursed?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, I can't help those people. They filled the bathtub with whiskey. We've done everything we can. I mean, I don't know.
4-17-1, as it's pointed out on Twitch before that. And after that, we know the results.
Speak for themselves. John, the dilemma for this week, it's what do you do with David Montgomery? He was a full participant at practice yesterday. Dan said yesterday with us that there's a role for him. What is that role?
Yeah.
I mean, because I think it's so tough to take Gibbs off the field with how well he's playing.
It is, but it's only been three games. And it's not to diminish what Gibbs has done. But before that, with the combo of Montgomery and Gibbs, Sonic and Knuckles, like that is... For a majority of the season, why the Lions have been so successful is the ability to have a change-up pitch in the backfield, whether it's the power of David Montgomery and the tone setter that he has been. How many times did we start at the beginning of the year talking about a first down run where he is hit at the line of scrimmage, yet seems to power forward for another 11 or 12 yards, or he's hit just shy of the first down marker, even by like 3 yards, and he just powers through or powers into the end zone. I don't think if he is healthy and available, I don't think you remove that as part of the equation.
Oh, of course not. But I do think this is Gibbs' backfield. And you mentioned fastball changeup. Most guys aren't throwing the changeup as often as the fastball. This is Gibbs' backfield. He is the better back. They have 14 big explosive runs this season. 14 as a team. How many do you think Gibbs has?
Well, he's probably got 10 of them.
13 of the 14.
Okay.
5.6 yards a carry. Montgomery, 4.2. And it's a tough, gritty 4.2, and he should be in short yardage and goal line and change of pace. But Gibbs is the back. And I think he has cemented that. He is the back that should get the predominant lion's share of the carries.
Or if you go back to the same formula before, is Gibbs even more productive because you have that in the backfield of Montgomery and Gibbs? And
but didn't he kind of answer over the last 3 weeks that no, if he just got the ball more, he would do even more cool stuff?
Well, I don't think there was a doubt that that would happen, because there was a doubt last year. And when David Montgomery went down, can Gibbs run between the tackles? He answered that question last year. And I don't think there's anybody that's going to sit there and say, you know, yeah, he's not the best back in the backfield. But the combination of these two guys, they've already extended David Montgomery. They know how valuable he is. And the value is in not just, we're looking at what the payoff is right now, as we should, right? What's the payoff against Washington? Is it going to pay off into a Super Bowl? But you also got to look down the road. Running backs have an expiration date.
Yep.
Do we want to push that expiration date a little bit out?
To win the Super Bowl?
What's that?
To win the Super Bowl? Yeah.
I don't think. I'm talking about, do we want to put that expiration date a little bit further down the road?
Oh, I get what you're saying.
For Gibbs or even Montgomery, because you're taking a little bit of wear and tear off, and we're talking 2-3 reps a game, 2 or 3 touches a game, versus, you know, you get down the road and now all of a sudden you've got one extra good year, because those things all add up. And it's not at the expense of not beating Washington or not beating the Rams or the Eagles, John, or whoever in the Super Bowl. I like the combination and the 1-2 punch of both those guys in the backfield. And I want to go back to the same formula that they had before, because I think it's even better now.
If they're up 17 points, yeah, I want to minimize the workload. But if they're in a close football game, Gibbs getting the football. And if I have to shave off a year at the end of his career in pursuit of a Super Bowl, I would gladly make that trade. Yeah,
but I'm not talking about. I think you could do both. I think
ideally,
I don't think that you have to use Gibbs as much as you did, because you do have David Montgomery.
Let me ask you a question. If we used Gibbs here in Detroit as much as Saquon Barkley is used, would Gibbs be just as productive? Maybe more? Younger? Explosive? The numbers bear out he would be.
Yes.
And I'm not saying Montgomery. My point is Gibbs.
What have we also seen from Saquon Barkley? There's been years that he's missed because of injury.
Yeah, but at this point, you're in the end game, right? Like, it's 3 football games.
Right.
I'm going to give Gibbs 65, 70% of the touches, knowing those are my best running plays. And I'll keep him fresh. I'll use Montgomery. But this is Gibbs' backfield to me. I don't know where people are at on this.
I don't think you go into a game saying, we want to get Gibbs 65% of the touches and David Montgomery 35%. I think it all plays itself out in the game. If that's what it ends up being, that's the way the game takes you, the way the defense is what they're allowing you, or what you're taking from the defense, then sure, that's great. But it also may be, hey, David Montgomery gets 45%. And Gibbs gets 55%, or it's 50-50. Like, I don't care about the percentages. All I do is care about the end game. And if the best formula is the 1-2 punch out of the backfield, however they get that done, then the numbers are what they are.
Look, if you throw a lot of first and tens that end in second and ones, Montgomery's going to get more carries because you want short yardage. My point is, like, all things being equal, first and 10, I'm going to turn around, hand a ball off. It's going to be Gibbs 7 of the 10 times. To me. But we can ask the audience, 248-539-9797. It's Sonic and Knuckles, right? There's two of these backs, and they've rode both of them to get here. Gibbs has taken over the backfield. How do you want to see it divvied up? And if you want to react to Jeff Daniels singing, I know there's some people with text on that. We're going to get to the Lions ticket prices. Hottest tickets in playoff history outside of Super Bowl games. It's 97.1.
Hey, when it comes to an IRS collection or audit, you need a law firm that specializes in the resolution of all types of tax problems. And when dealing with the world's largest civil law enforcement agency, your case could take a lot of twists and turns. Your first call should be to an experienced law firm like Abraham and Rose. They're prepared to advocate on your behalf, no matter if it's civil or criminal or even the Michigan Department of Treasury, whether personal income tax or business payroll taxes. You're going to need a real team of local lawyers, not some tax organization with a random individual that you're never going to meet. Visit AbrahamandRose.com today or call 248-539-5040 so you never personally have to deal with the IRS.
David Montgomery back at practice, full participant, will be part of the game plan against the Commanders. Our question was, how big a game plan? How big a role does he have? 248-539-9797. John, you said it wasn't broke before. Get back to it.
Yeah. Give him the ball.
And I had the audacity to point out that Gibbs is running for an extra yard and a half every time he touches the ball and has all but one of their explosive runs. I want more Gibbs.
There's value in both. And I understand the value in having those explosive runs. There's 13 out of the 14 are Gibbs. The numbers are what they are.
How do you argue it? Why do you want to see a close to 50-50 split if one guy is exponentially...
I hate first downs.
Touchdowns more.
I think that Montgomery adds another element to this offense, and I'd like to see him used as he was before.
Ticket texters. I'm with John. Depends on what the defense is giving and what backs are doing. You can ride the hot hand. Another texter says Costa needs to shut his pie hole, starting controversy when there is none. Gibbs and Montgomery work better together, Sonic and Knuckles. Costa acting like Montgomery's Zach Zenner. The Lions don't use Gibbs like Barkley because they have a more complete offense. Among other ticket texts, that's kind of the sentiment. Don't break this up. Don't break this up. Guys, Gibbs had 100 yards in each of the last three games. He is the more explosive back. He is the more productive back. These are playoff games. This is the best right now. Ride him into the ground and win a Super Bowl. I'm not telling you Montgomery's going to be Zach Zenner and he's going to sit on the bench, but I'm going to use him, John, your word, as a changeup, which is probably only about a third of the time. Situationally, maybe it ticks up a little more. Maybe if you're up big, you have the luxury of taking some of the load off of Jahmyr Gibbs' shoulders. But why is this a controversy? Play the better back more carries. That's what. Just so we understand what I'm saying this morning, I want to play the best back the most, and that's controversial. Because it's Sonic and Knuckles and their buddies. Play the best guy the most.
It has nothing to do with their buddies.
That's ticket texters.
I think you crossed the line on the buddies thing. I see where John's coming from in terms of, I think this is a little bit more complicated than some of these people that are going after you. That the backfield could go back to the way it was, but it might not. Like, if you look at the Super Bowl MVP odds right now, the Montgomery people out there need to realize this. Jahmyr Gibbs has the highest Super Bowl MVP odds other than a quarterback right now. Mm-hmm. He's tied with Saquon Barkley. He's playing at an MVP level right now. And his explosiveness the last four games looks reminiscent of the way Marshall Faulk used to be in the Rams offense, okay? And it's not taking away from Montgomery. This backfield might be the best backfield in NFL history, potentially. I think that. Like, who's the better combo?
There might not be.
I think Brandon Jacobs and Tiki Barber were really good in their prime. That was tough to prepare for, and I think that's comparable to this. And Tiki Barber eventually got more and more because of explosiveness.
Yeah, and I think the other comp people have used when this got designed was Kamara and Ingram, right? Gibbs is better than Kamara, and I think Montgomery's played better than Ingram. Like, this might be the best backfield that we've ever seen.
That we've ever seen, sure. I think if you're talking, in NFL history, there's how far do we want to go back? But yeah, there's been some really good duos. But I think that there is a formula. And it's up to Ben Johnson and Dan Campbell to figure out what that formula is that is best for the Detroit Lions. It's going to be different against Washington than it is against whoever they face in the NFC Championship game versus whoever they face in the Super Bowl. Defenses will be different. They will do. You want to be able to dictate what you want to do offensively. Sometimes a defense will take away. They'll design something to just strictly take away David Montgomery or take away Jahmyr Gibbs. that's when you're going to have to rely on the other one to have more carries and to have be more productive.
Don't you think it's easier to take away Montgomery because of Gibbs' speed?
Speed,
yeah, yeah. So that's why I think, look, we had a ticket texter said, you know, Montgomery for ball control. I'm not, if I'm game planning for this game, the last thing I'm doing is getting into a ball control game. You're limiting possessions. That's how one of the ways the Commanders beat the Buccaneers. You want a high possession game. You want to have explosive plays and put your foot on the throat. Jahmyr Gibbs early, Montgomery later. You get down to the goal line on the first drive, you go with your better goal line back. Let's face it, Gibbs got stuffed a couple of times in one of those games where he was the main man. Montgomery's the better goal line guy. There's no denying that.
I think when Montgomery went down, we were all excited that Gibbs was going to get the ball more, and there was a question, would he be less efficient without someone to spell him, right? He ran for 6 yards a carry against Minnesota. He ran for 6.5 yards a carry against the Niners. He ran for 100 yards in three straight games. The answer was no. The efficiency didn't dip. And maybe that's a small sample, but all we're working with is a small sample now. I feel like he is the better back, and I want to play the better players more snaps. That's all I'm saying. This is not David Montgomery's chopped liver, as a ticket texter put it. It's just an acknowledgement of what is the winning formula for this football team. It's playing the more explosive back, the better back, the more productive back, the majority of the snaps.
I want to play the more effective back, and that's going to be determined as the game is played.
Situationally.
Right, and it may be Gibbs, and it may be Montgomery. Like, I don't... Until they get in the game and we figure out what Washington is going to try to do to slow down this offense, because, and what makes this offense so explosive? It's not just Goff. It's not just Amon-Ra St. Brown. Now, they all have different roles and they have different things that they do, but it's the combination of J-Mo, of Laporta, of Amon-Ra St. Brown. And then you throw in the running backs and how they handle and how the different ways that Ben Johnson can utilize both. What I would really like to see is both the guys on the field at the same time more often. And it may be, if they're both on the field at the same time more often, it still may be Gibbs gets the ball more. Or it could be that he's used as a bit of a distraction and all of a sudden here comes Montgomery kicking your ass.
Yeah, it puts the defense in conflict. Let's get to the phones. Alex in Detroit, you're on 97.1.
Hey, guys. How you doing this morning?
Good.
Good. Love the conversation. I agree with John 100% on this. I think that coming in with a game plan of using Montgomery, I think is more than just, you know, what Gibbs is going to do. But Montgomery, the way he runs, he softens up that defense. And coming down into the third and fourth quarter, running him up the middle, constantly banging into them guys, it makes him a little bit weaker. And it also gives Gibbs the opportunity to go out and do his thing. So I think that game plan has been effective for Detroit all year. And I'm hoping that that's what they're going to do coming into Washington. I think that would be the best game plan for them to use, even if it's 50-50. But Montgomery is an outstanding running back. And using him has things that's going to affect that whole game.
I agree with you, obviously. And here's the thing, too. The big question I had about Gibbs going in is he going to be able to pass protect like David Montgomery?
That's a fair point.
And he answered that question. That was the bigger question. I thought he would be durable. I thought he could run between the tackles. He could be explosive, still be explosive in the pass game, all of those different things. Could he step up and pass protect like David Montgomery? The answer is yes, which is why I think, especially in passing downs, both guys should be on the field at the same time. It puts the defense in conflict. And again, how do you defend against a team that can go deep, can go middle, can go short, and can run either side with either back?
I am surprised we didn't see more of it when they were both healthy, just because Ben Johnson has done the exotic formations. So not that two backs is overly exotic, but you can get creative. You can do split backs. You can put them both in the backfield. You can have both at receiver. You can have one motion in. I mean, you could do a lot of things with different personnel groupings, and that's one I don't think we've seen much of. But maybe that's what comes out in the playoffs, is it's another wrinkle where they're able to get Montgomery on the field with Gibbs. I just don't like taking Gibbs off the field unless, you know, he's carried it 8 straight times or something, and hey, got to give the guy a breather. But I want Gibbs out there as much as possible. I kind of feel like he's solidified the role. Let's get to Rick in Algonac. Rick, good morning. You're on 97.1.
Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, John had a good point. it'd be pretty cool to have them both on the field at the same time, but they got a weapon right off the bat, an additional weapon. Teams have to game plan for both of them guys. And I think Dan Campbell's smart enough, you know, or Ben Johnson's smart enough not to say, well, we're going to do this one 70%, do that one 30%. Because, you know, right off the bat, again, you got to plan for both of them, 50-50. Then you see how the game rolls and go from there. I'll hang up, get your guys' thoughts.
Yeah, Rick, I think you're right to point out that I don't feel coaches literally write down how many carries before the game these guys are. Our question was, like, how should it play out? How do you want it to play out? What's the best way for it to play out? We'll keep talking about it. I think it's an interesting dilemma. It's a good problem to have. We got two really good backs.
Yeah.
How many carries do you want him to get? And some of this will depend on Montgomery's true health. I know he practiced in full. I think they still have to evaluate, even maybe in-game, how he's doing and how that's going. So we'll keep that conversation rolling. We're also going to get into these Lions tickets. Have you seen the prices?
It's crazy.
This is the hottest ticket for an NFL playoff game that's not the Super Bowl. What does that mean for you guys? We'll do it next, 97.1.